to the news.
The Commerce Department reports that the economy grew at 2.9% annual rate in the spring. That's worse than the winter pace, but still better than first estimated. The World Bank says that climate change may be one of the biggest threats to slashing poverty in the world's poorest nations and has forced the bank to reassess its development projects as a result. Prices at the gas pump are continuing to fall. The national average now $2.84. That's the lowest since April 20th. And some analysts are predicting it will be below $2.50 a gallon by Thanksgiving. An FDA advisory committee is recommending approval for Gestiva, a drug designed to prevent premature births. Google's CEO, Eric Schmidt, has been elected to Apple Computer's board of directors, a move seen by analysts as a sign that Apple is looking at new strategies. The Census Bureau reports that the nation's median household income rose slightly faster than inflation last year for the first time this decade. However, that rise had little to do with paychecks, which were lower last year than they were in 2004. Gold is trading higher this hour at $625 an ounce. Silver is at $12.62. And oil continues to fall right now at $68.95 a barrel. That's down 76 cents. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrial's up 9 at 11,379. NASDAQ is up 11 at 2183. S&P 500 is flat at 1204. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The elections of 2006 are little more than 2 months away. They're just around the corner. And these are turning out to be, in all likelihood, the most eventful midterm elections in a dozen years, ever since the Republicans took the House and the Senate back in 1994. This may be the time when the Democrats can take it back. Now, the Democrats have always said, you know, that they've had a chance, but this time, apparently the Republicans believe them, and the conventional wisdom is that the Democrats will take back the House, and they've even got a shot at taking back the Senate. Well, I've got someone on the air as a guest who is working hard to prevent that from taking place. His name is Michael Lane. He is the president of Intellifant Strategies. He is his job to provide intelligence to the elephants to help elect Republicans to public office. And he is clear proof, in fact, that you can disagree strongly on issues of politics in America but still be an agreeable person. Mike Lane, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on again.
It's good to have you on. I have to say, I think it's your first time on the Head On Radio Network, though you've been on my show a number of times, and I think they've got some tough questions for you, so I look forward to the debate.
I look forward to them as well. I hope that we have a lively hour.
I think we will. Let me start with sort of the basics of this upcoming election. The Republicans have argued, and certainly President Bush has argued for 6 years, it's stay the course. Stay the course. We're doing fine. Stay with it. And the Democrats are basically saying time for a change. And my question to you is, when people look out and they see a war in Iraq that has no end in sight, where more people are dying at a faster rate, both our troops and civilians, and it doesn't look like there's really any real exit strategy, when you look at the fact that real wages are going down for people at the same time as oil prices and health care prices are through the roof, and when you look at the fact that our government spending is through the roof, so if you're a fiscal conservative, you're probably concerned about that, and the president wants to extend his tax cuts to make that systematic through the future, don't you think that people are going to vote for a change?
Well, Mark, certainly let me echo that I agree not only with your introduction there, but with the words of a great Democratic strategist, James Carville, who I read yesterday was quoted as saying that if the Democrats can't win in the current political climate, they need to reexamine the entire purpose of their party. I agree with him. I think that things are looking good for the Democrats, and they're not looking good for the Republicans. But we do have a strategy. We do know where we're going to play the campaign between now and the next 75 days as we go into the finals here. And that strategy is going to be on national security again. It won't surprise anybody. And if the Democrats don't change their position on national security, then indeed they're going to have to reexamine the purpose of their party.
So you're going to play the terrorism card yet again, huh?
We are going to campaign on the fact that the president has a strong and vibrant strategy for combating terrorism, and at every turn he fails to get the support of the Democratic Party, whether it be listening to terrorists who want to place phone calls from overseas to domestic numbers, or whether it's tracking terrorist transfer of money from bank account to bank account, or whatever it is, we seem to be getting resistance from Democrats at every level.
Well, I'll be happy to discuss both those issues with you. Before I do, I want to play a clip, if I can, from a recent press conference from George Bush. It's a very short clip. It's about 15 seconds long. But to me, it typifies the problem that the president has as he continues this same theme again and again. Bob, can we play that clip?
The terrorists attacked us and killed 3,000 of our citizens before we started the freedom agenda in the Middle East. What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing.
Now, that was a very interesting clip for me, because rarely can we get in 15 seconds the president admitting that Iraq had nothing to do with the attack on the World Trade Center, and yet you hear at the very beginning him repeating again and again and trying to draw a connection between the two. Is this argument finally going to see itself on the dustbin of history, and the Republicans going to recognize that the attacks on 9/11 and Al-Qaeda and fighting against terrorism really is a very separate issue from Iraq?
Mark, if you have a transcript of that clip, I'm going to ask you to read it to me, because unfortunately the audio did not come through on my end.
I apologize. Let me tell you what he said, because it's very short. He said that I'm getting almost the exact words, that the terrorists killed 3,000 Americans before we began our freedom agenda in the Middle East, at which point the reporter said, what does that have to do with Iraq? And the president said, what does that have to do with Iraq? Nothing. And I think he said, excuse me, what did the attack on the World Trade Center have to do with Iraq? And he said, what did it have to do with Iraq? Nothing. And it's that connection that where the president and his people are constantly implying a connection between terrorism and Iraq, but then when forced to confront that exact issue, he has to admit there is no connection.
Well, here's the connection, and it needs to be spelled out clearly for everybody, this audience as well as everybody who goes to the polls in November. The connection between Iraq and the war on terrorism is that Iraq is one of the many fronts on which we're fighting the war on terrorism. There's no doubt that there are still a lot of bad guys throughout the world, and one of the most visible reminders of that was the success that the British police, Scotland Yard, had in terms of tracking down those terrorists who were going to take some 9 planes out of the air on their way to America. But Iraq is one of those fronts. We're not just fighting good old boys over there. They are hardened terrorists. We're fighting them. If we ever lose Iraq to the bad guys, to the terrorists, that will become the number one place where terrorists can gather and train the way Afghanistan was under the Taliban.
And, Mike, of course, we have Saudi Arabia, we have Syria, we have Hezbollah, we certainly have Iran, we've got Pakistan. In fact, the people that plotted the plot in Britain tended to be Pakistani nationals. And, of course, we've got Osama bin Laden alive and well with a new report that came out in Ron Susskind's terrific book that, in fact, George Bush was warned that if he didn't put more American troops at Tora Bora in November 2001, Osama bin Laden would escape. And he didn't put the more troops out, and Osama bin Laden escaped. And my question for you is, yes, there is danger all over the world. There are terrorists all over the world. But shouldn't we be confronting the terrorists that most threaten Americans first and then go after, you know, bad guys like Saddam Hussein as a later priority?
Well, I think you fight the ones that you can win. And whether or not we made the right judgment to go into Iraq back in 2003, that water is past the dam at this point, and we have to look at the current situation and say, okay, Iraq, and I think the president would admit that mistakes have been made, and everything has not gone according to the exact plan that he would have envisioned. However, now we find ourselves in August of 2006, and we have to look at the world as it is and say, okay, what are we going to do? And cut and run in Iraq is not a strategy, because if we leave Iraq to the bad guys, to the terrorists, they will use that as their base of operations, and anybody and everybody who's out for us can have safe haven there, and we want to deny them that.
See, Mike, one of the reasons why I like to have you on my program is because you're so good at spouting those spin bites that Republicans need. Mistakes have been made. The reason I like that one is because it's in the passive voice. Mistakes have been made. It sounds like, you know, it rained today, or it doesn't focus on who made the mistake. And the fact of the matter, you know it, Mike, as well as I do, although I don't think the Republican Party wants to admit it, is the people who've made the mistakes in Iraq have been promoted. They've been given medals of freedom. People like George Tenet and Don Rumsfeld, where it's those that told the truth about what was going to happen in Iraq, all those generals and all those bureaucrats that told George Bush this is exactly what's going to happen, they're out of government now. And those critics, I even include Colin Powell. So when you say mistakes have been made, don't you think that if you learn from mistakes, you fire the people who made them and promote the people who corrected the strategy?
Well, we don't live in a mistake-free environment. No, you don't fire everybody who makes a mistake, and we can argue over who it was that made the mistakes, but when you bring out the ex-generals who are ganging up or coalescing or forming their organization to tell the truth about Iraq or whatever it is, Mark, you have to remember, there are some 3,000 retired generals who are alive in this country today, and only five of them, five out of 3,000, were the ones who would come out and say, we don't like what the Secretary of Defense did here, that was a mistake. Five out of 3,000 is not exactly a damning indictment.
So in your view, it's a minority opinion that that Don Rumsfeld made the mistake.
I think if the secretary had it to do over again, the secretary probably would have put more troops in the aftermath, the beginning of the occupation. Certainly we didn't need them for the assault. Probably had too many by 100% on the assault, the way the Iraqi army folded up and melted off into the sunset. But it's not just the mistakes of how many we had in the occupation immediately afterwards. I think the two biggest mistakes in my estimation and in the estimation of a lot of people who have been talking about this lately came from General Bremer, who was acting as a civilian, not as a military man, when he headed up the reconstruction of Iraq in the first 2 years afterwards. And the two mistakes he made were, number one, disbanding the Iraqi military with absolutely no plans as to what to do with these militarily trained young men who had no jobs, no future, no nothing. And the second one, of course, was a ban on all Ba'athists participating in the government. That was a close call. Certainly had the problem of Ba'athists who would have been continuing loyal to Saddam Hussein, and they would have been able to sabotage the effort from within. But it's been clear that there are some people in the Ba'athists who got in anyway and sabotaged from within. So I think the two biggest mistakes were Paul Bremer in terms of disbanding the army with no plan for them, and the banning of the Ba'athists from the whole thing. And I will freely admit this, Mark, that on one of those, I probably would have supported them at the time. The banning of the Ba'athists was something I thought was a good move at the time. I've learned from watching that it probably wasn't. I still would have disbanded the military under the circumstances of what we knew then.
But, Mike, let me go to a broader point, okay? I certainly agree that Bremer made his share of mistakes. I think that George Tenet made a colossal error when he told the president what I think the president wanted to hear, that it was a slam dunk that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. And I think that Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney made a colossal error when they talked about rose petals in the streets, that we were going to be greeted as liberators. They clearly did not have their finger on the Iraqi pulse. But all three men not only, you know, are still in office, but they received the Congressional Medal of Freedom, the highest honor we can bestow. What do you think about the fact that the people who've made the greatest mistakes, the people who are most responsible as architects of the war, and the main reason why we're in the middle of a civil war now, and that's not just retired generals saying that, that's General Abizaid and current generals saying that, that these people, the architects who made the mistakes, are receiving the medals of honor while the critics are getting kicked out?
Well, Abizaid did not exactly say that we were in a civil war yet. He said conditions were right for falling into a civil war if they don't improve. And the good news is, in the last week, 10 days, things have been getting marginally better. We'll see
Mike,
what the next 10 days
bring. We have 100 civilians dying a day. Now, they've never died at that rate. Never, not even close.
They have. All right, Mark, you have me at a disadvantage. You know your audience doesn't know that I've been away from the news for about 3 or 4 days, and I don't know what's happened in the last 36 hours. But previous to that, the 10 days, violence was down by 30% in Baghdad as the Americans redeployed into the city of Baghdad and started to restore order. Look, the real problem here is the Iraqis, and we all know this, the Iraqis are not stepping up to the job as enthusiastically and as energetically as we all need them to do and as we all expect them to do. They are doing a good job. They are not doing a great job. Case in point, there was a news channel that went along with an Iraqi raid on a suspected safe house. The Americans accompanied them. The Iraqis went in there. They did great. They captured five bad guys. They tied them up and marched them out, et cetera, and they were going to bring home their trophies until the American advisors said, no, wait a second, guys. We haven't searched the house and the grounds yet. So they forced the Iraqi troops back in. They searched it, and they came up with, you know, a good 3-4 months' worth of weapons and ammunition that had been stashed in that house. The Iraqis really have to step up to the plate and do the job they're expected to. And I will grant you, you and I have had this conversation before, not necessarily on this show, that time is running out. Now, my initial thought was that they had till about the end of this year to really demonstrate they could do it. I think they can still do it, but I do have my concerns that they're going too slow.
Well, the president has extended the deadline. He's basically said, I'm in Iraq till I'm out of office. Until January 20th, 2009, we are stuck there. And to me, that doesn't sound like much of an exit strategy, but we have to take a break. Folks, if you want to call in and challenge Mike Lane or challenge me, you're welcome to do so. In fact, I encourage it. The toll-free number is
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Radio program weekdays 5 to 7 p.m. Connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total cap.
Bruce, I love you more.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-425-2255. 424-8580. Or go to PeaceCorps.gov.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Should we stay the course, or is it time for a change? Republicans argue, in fact, that we're getting some progress in Iraq. Of course, they've been saying that for 2 years, for 4 years now. And now that we're coming up in the election of 2006, is that the strategy that's going to take them to another electoral victory? We have Dick Cheney, who thinks it will. And he has said, quote, from the standpoint of al-Qaeda, they are betting on the proposition they can break the will of the American people. He said another time, quote, if we elect Democrats, we'll get hit again, unquote. My guest is Mike Lane, president of Intelligence Strategies. He works to elect Republicans. Mike, does Dick Cheney's comment, if we elect Democrats, we will get hit again, do you think that's a little extreme? Because it seems to me that if the Democrats were to say such a thing, they'd be raked over the coals.
Well, I think the Democrats have raked Dick Cheney over the coals for it, perhaps rightly so from your perspective. And I'll admit, it's an extraordinarily strong comment. What he's saying is that you can't have a perception of weakness at all. You have to throw everything you have against this enemy. They are brutal. They are every place. They are insistent, and they will not give up. And to the extent that Democrats, as a strategy, start talking about a pullout of Iraq before we're ready, as they talk about maybe not using all the tools that we can at our disposal to fight the terrorists, it has the tendency to embolden those who would misinterpret the Democrats as being perhaps too soft on this whole thing, or correctly interpret the Democrats as being too soft in the war on terrorism, and it would encourage them to come out further.
Are you really saying that al-Qaeda is watching the Connecticut primary and cheering for Joe Lieberman? I mean, do they really care about our domestic politics?
No,
I
think they're watching the Connecticut primary and they're cheering for Ned Lamont, not for Joe Lieberman. And yes, I do think they watch our domestic politics. Bin Laden himself has said that the genesis of his thought that America was too soft to strike back was when we pulled out of Vietnam with our tail between our legs. And if he has a memory that goes back some 40 years, then it seems to me, or 30 years, then it seems to me that, yes, they're watching our domestic policies, and they're either reading it or misreading it, but they're making their own interpretation.
Well, let me make a suggestion to you that may be counterintuitive, but I strongly believe that our military is weaker because they're bogged down in Iraq. And I'll give you a number of examples. One, Tora Bora. Because, we didn't spend enough troops in Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden was able to escape, and there are stories now that Afghanistan is going back toward the Taliban. We've got Pakistan, where Osama bin Laden may well be hiding. They could probably use some U.S. help. We have Iran, which is an incredible danger, a man who's talked about wiping Israel off the state of the map, who has refused the United Nations, which has said he needs to cut off his nuclear weapons. You have Hezbollah, which is very strong, and we apparently were too bogged down in Iraq to help in Lebanon, and certainly we're too bogged down in Iraq to help in North Korea. I would suggest to you that America is weaker precisely because we're bogged down in a war with no exit strategy in sight and no realistic opportunity to win that war.
Well, our military strategy and our preparedness, Mark, has historically been based on the ability to fight a war on two fronts simultaneously. We still have the ability to fight a war on two fronts simultaneously, although we are down to one front since we're involved in one front now. We only have the ability.
We're involved
to
in Afghanistan too. We're in two fronts right now, and I would suggest to you the war in Afghanistan is more important.
Well, the war in Afghanistan is important. I don't think it is as important now. Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden's ability to really interdict and launch attacks at the United States has been severely restricted. He may be living in some cold cave someplace, shivering at night, you know, hoping for a warm bed one of these days, but he's not getting it now. And our real fight today is in Iraq, and as you point out, there are four or five other fronts that are brewing: Korea, Iran, certainly Lebanon is one of those things. I doubt we'd ever find it in our interest to go into Lebanon again. We did that once. It didn't work out all that well. We we are effectively using the United Nations to put together an international force there. Everything takes a lot longer than you think it will, and it's frustrating.
Mike, I'm making a broader point here. My broader point is this. To the extent that America is seen as a paper tiger, whether it's Vietnam or anything else, and I think that was a huge mistake, but you and I agree that to the extent that America is seen as a paper tiger, there are going to be more attacks. And it seems to me like I'm willing to hear two sides of the same argument here. I mean, Mike, here we know, and you talk about the fact that there's that Al-Qaeda is still operative, that the British Pakistanis, everyone believes, and the evidence I've seen is that they are connected to Al-Qaeda, that they were planning attacks over the oceans, and that the war in Iraq did nothing to affect them. I would submit to you that if we were to remove our troops in Iraq, then people would see we had a standing army that was more powerful to go after them. And after all, isn't it true that way more than 90% of the attacks going on in Iraq right now have nothing whatsoever to do with Al-Qaeda? They are Iraqis killing Iraqis, Shiites killing Sunnis, Sunnis killing Shiites, and both of them trying to kill us. And it very much has to do with nationalist goals. They want Iraq to be free of American occupation and not to do with Al-Qaeda's goals.
Well, they're certainly going about it the wrong way. If the objective of this sectarian violence is to rid themselves of the supervising effect of the American presence, they ought to just, cool it for 6 months, and they'd get their objectives a lot faster. Sometimes these people, they're just not as bright as they ought to be.
Well, there's another objective, obviously. It's sectarian violence. The Sunnis and the Shiites each want the same territory.
Right. But
it's civil war.
Getting back to the point, Mark, about Al-Qaeda and Osama, and they're the real enemy. They are mostly interdicted now. We've killed 80% of their leadership, et cetera. My problem with just giving them Iraq is that Osama and company will then move in. They will have an entire country set up which protects them and aids and abets and facilitates their war against America, and it'll just be just like the Taliban did in Afghanistan. They'll give them safe haven, and we'll be in a worse spot. I'd rather have them in a cold, damp cave.
Who said anything about giving them Iraq? Are you disagreeing with the fact that I say, which is that more than 90% of the insurgency is local Iraqi nationals that are fighting either because they're Sunnis and Shiites that want to kill each other and grab territory, or because they're fighting for power in Iraq, or because they're fighting to get us out? They're not fighting to do Osama bin Laden's bidding. Do you dispute that? That more than 90% have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda?
No, but should they win, they will invite Osama in. They're not doing his bidding, but he...
Why would they invite Osama in? They are going for their own power. I understand the Shiites want their power, and the Sunnis want their power, and I'm sure they'll fight each other, but why would they invite a third power force in when... I mean, I could see, frankly, the Shiites inviting Iran in before I could see them inviting Al-Qaeda in.
Well, what they will do is they'll invite the... I mean, it's not that they want to share power. They'll give him free sanctuary on the belief that he doesn't have any power play intended for the government of Iraq, the way he had no power play intended for the government of the Taliban in Afghanistan. What they do is give him free sanctuary, and it enhances their prestige to have him operating out of their country. And it's...
Mike, I really want to make sure that you mean what you say, because I think you're really out on the limb here. You're saying that basically we're fighting the war in Iraq because we're afraid that Iraq's going to invite Osama bin Laden in and give him sanctuary. My guess is Pakistan, our ally, our ostensible ally, is already giving Osama bin Laden sanctuary. It may not be the Pakistani government, but it's elements in Pakistan. I mean, if he goes to Iraq, frankly, we have enough knowledge there, we could probably take him out. That can't be the reason why we're fighting the war in Iraq, is it?
We're fighting the war in Iraq. Well, we're not fighting the war in Iraq anymore. We are trying to establish a safe, democratic government in Iraq, to show the people of the Middle East that this is the way to go and this is the future, and that all the countries ought to look at it as the model and example as to how they will govern themselves in the future, including our current friend Saudi Arabia, which I admit has a long way to go in terms of coming back into the 21st century. But yes, I am afraid, and I think a lot of experts, Mark, are afraid, that if we just cut and run the way Nancy Pelosi... And
cut and run. Use those three, that three-word strategy. Okay,
well,
cut and run. Go ahead.
Pelosi's strategy is cut and run. And
cut and run. How about turn and fight? How about leave the place where we're not fighting the enemies of the United States and fighting? I mean, aren't we cutting and running from North Korea, which we allow to develop nuclear weapons? Aren't we cutting and running from Iran that's about to violate the U.N. sanctions and develop nuclear weapons that can do real damage, unlike Saddam Hussein? Aren't we cutting and running when we're allowing Osama bin Laden to live freely in Pakistan and still order dangers? I mean, don't you think that redeploying, perhaps, is a better word than cutting and running?
Well, redeploying to where? I mean, you know, your good buddy John Murtha suggested that we redeploy to Okinawa. Now, that doesn't make too much sense because it's kind of hard to get back in there when they need us from Okinawa. I mean,
I will agree that that's a bad strategy. You and I can agree on that. Look, Mike, we've got to take another break. When we come back, I want to get to more domestic politics, the ins and outs of various races, and I know my listeners do too, because Robert has written on the blog a lot of tough questions for you, and I want to read them to you. Folks, if you want to call in and join the debate, we really welcome that. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, or comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Will America vote in November 2006 for a change, or will they stay the course even if it leads them off a cliff? Discussing this with me is Mike Lane, one of my favorite Republicans, but a Republican still he is. He works to elect Republicans, in fact, for a living. Mike, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Good to be here, Mark. Thank you.
I have a number of comments on the blog. Robert, my listener Robert, seems to have it out for you, and he asks about various candidates, about Catherine electing non-Christians is a sin, Harris, about George Makaka Allen. He asks about where are the Republicans in Connecticut, Let's take them one by one. Let's start with Catherine Harris. Robert writes, quote, does Mike have any plans to help Catherine Harris with her challenging endeavor? Or does Mike have any advice for her latest campaign manager? Can he help her? She really needs his expertise. Let's start with Catherine Harris, Mike.
Well, he's right. She needs my expertise, but she's not going to get it. The sad fact is that absent an act of God, Senator Nelson is going to hang on to that seat. Catherine Harris is the wrong candidate at the wrong time for the Republican Party. There's still an outside chance that she may lose the primary, but all indications are that she's going to win it, and if she does, that seat stays in the Democratic column. I wish I could give you a better scenario, but I'm a realist.
Well, for the record, I hope she does win the primary because I will enjoy when Ben Nelson trounces her in the general election.
And but it will be by at least 15 points, and it will not be pretty.
No, it won't be, but I'll enjoy it. But here's my question, and it goes to what she said, not just who she is, and we all know, of course, the history of 2000. But when she says, in effect, that it's a sin not to elect Christians in government, I guess my question is, a lot of people feel that she may be stupid enough to say things, but that some Republicans, quite a number of them, are saying things in private and in quiet that she's saying out loud. Do you think there is a strong wing of the Republican Party that actually believes this kind of thing?
You know, there's nuts and kooks in both parties, and, you know, certainly we would all prefer to live without them if we could, but the objective is to put together a coalition that gets you to 51% of the election, and all too often you wind up with some people in your coalition for mathematical reasons that you wouldn't have in your coalition for ideological reasons. Let me say, of all the people that I know, or all the people that I would work with, or all the people that I work with on a daily basis trying to get the right Republicans elected, this is not the kind of attitude that we would tolerate or that we would put up with.
True, but you're in Northern Virginia. You're not in the South. You're not in Central Florida. You're not out in Idaho. Before we go on to the next person, though, I want to bring Wayne in. Wayne is calling in and has a question for Mike. Wayne, welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm doing good.
I just wanted to ask your guest if he thought it was a problem that Paul Bremer has never been held accountable for the $9 billion he lost in the couch or wherever he lost it.
That's a real good question, Wayne. I was asking Mike before why these people have not been held accountable, why they've been getting the Congressional Medal of Freedom. That's a great example. We have $9 billion in cash that's been, oops, misplaced. Don't you think Paul Bremer should be held accountable for that or somebody?
Well, this is really a tough call, Mark. And Wayne, thank you very much for your question. I understand your anger about it. I'm angry about it. But when you have a situation where, you know, it's a trade-off. You can have bureaucratic inertia. You can hold things up. You can find ways not to make things happen and document every last penny that you shovel out the door trying to help rebuild and reconstruct the country. And it takes three times longer than it should. Or you can err on the side of, okay, we're going to trust some people perhaps we shouldn't trust. We're going to get this reconstruction started. We're going to flow the money at full speed in the direction of the problem and hope that most of it does the right thing. You know, I'm going to bring up on the domestic side, we have the exact same problem down in New Orleans. We've shoveled too much money out the door too fast with little regard for enforcement in terms of making sure that's being used for the right thing, but it has helped people because some people who would have still been in line today waiting to get their reconstruction money got it a year ago because they didn't have to wait in line.
Mike, listen, I can see why you're good at what you do because you're really good at putting a spin on things, but as Rob Corddry used to say on The Daily Show, come on, we're not talking about a $2.95 for a hammer and trying to figure out, you know, carrying the extra penny. We're talking about $9 billion in cash. Heck, at least in New Orleans, the money went to Americans who we can presume at least, even if they're using it on booze, aren't using it to fight and kill American soldiers. $9 billion in cash. And oops, and you're saying that's nickel and diming? Come on.
It's significant money. As I remember, it was about 25% of the total up to that point that was significant money. No, that's not nickel and dime. That's real money.
Thank you.
But at the same time,
it was $36 billion or $45 billion that didn't sit there with bureaucrats going through every paperclip and every T and every I to make sure that...
So we lost 25%. So we lost one-fourth. So we lost $9 billion. Not that big a deal. Here's an idea. All right, I understand mistakes happen. Mistakes have been made. But Wayne's question was, why hasn't Bremer or anyone else, and tell me if someone has because I'd like to hear it, been held accountable for that colossal error?
Well, I think they've submitted their reports as to where they think it went, how they think it was unaccounted for, et cetera. It's been reviewed by the appropriate authorities, and it's been accepted. I mean, what do you want the guy to do, write a check for $9 billion out of his own pocket? That's probably not going to happen.
Well, maybe he should be fired. You know, because if I lost $9 million, I think I'd be fired, much less $9 billion. If I said there was a slam dunk that there's going to be weapons of mass destruction, and by saying that, got America into a war that lost 2,500 Americans, 10,000-plus wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead, and I was, oops, wrong, you know, I think that... I wouldn't get the Congressional Medal of Freedom. It seems to me, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong, but this is an administration that cares far more about public relations, far more about not admitting they've done wrong than correcting real mistakes.
Well, I think they certainly care about correcting real mistakes, and I don't think Mr. Bremer will be rehired for anything anytime.
Can we rescind his Medal of Freedom? What do you think?
By the government? No. But you're right, Mark. I'll freely grant you that. We've spent too much time giving out awards that people haven't deserved, thereby not only pretending to smooth something over, which is half the problem, but the real problem to me is we're cheapening the value of the award by giving it to people who, in my estimation, don't deserve it. And I won't defend the fact that we've given out too many awards to people who don't deserve them.
See if I get an admission from you on air. Will you join me today, right now, live, in calling for the rescinding of the Medal of Freedom given to Bremer, Tenet, and Rumsfeld?
I'll go with you the one on Tenet. We can discuss in further detail the ones on Bremer and Rumsfeld.
All right, I'll take one-third. That's about the best I can get. Folks, if you want to call in, here's your last opportunity. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When we come back, Robert's still got some more questions on the blog about some other Republican candidates coming up in the 2006 race, and you can comment on the blog yourself at RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on the subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
Son, you catch on quick, I tell you. Very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I've had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Should this country vote for a change? I'm debating the issue with Mike Lane, the president of Intelligent Strategies, working to get Republicans elected, while I do my best to support the Democratic Party because I think it's the last best hope for America. Let me go to Gene from Oregon, who's calling in. Gene, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Lane.
Hey, Gene, how you doing today?
All right. Mr. Lane, I had a question for you.
Go ahead, please.
I think you made the statement that Republicans are bringing democracy to America. Is that correct?
Well, the policy of the administration is to plant the seeds in a successful government of democracy in Iraq, the theory being that it will then flourish and grow, and more democracies will sprout up among the Middle East as the existing populace there sees how well it works and start demanding a say in their own government themselves. Yes.
And me, when I hear that, I want to sing "To Dream the Impossible Dream." But go ahead, Gene.
The question that I had, Mr. Lane, would you care to respond to a August 17th article in the New York Times, which senior administration officials have acknowledged to me, meaning the author of the article, that they are considering alternatives other than democracy? And here's my point. Since you guys basically have the whole enchilada, basically, as far as the current government here in the United States and are pretty much controlling the show on the ground, at least from the American point of view, this kind of sounds like an admission of cunning and running, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Gene. So that's two questions for you, Mike. One is, do you think that there are those in the government who will accept less than democracy, maybe a good old autocracy that's supporting the American people? And secondly, given that Republicans control the entire enchilada, as Gene puts it, aren't they really responsible for this mess?
Well, Gene, I'm going to take the difficult way out and answer your question directly. The easy way out would just be to say, oh, well, you read it in the New York Times, next question. But I won't do that. I'll respond to it. The fact is, things are not going as fast there as the president and the administration would like them to go. The goal and the objective is still to have a flourishing democracy in Iraq. There is no talk at the presidential level that I'm aware of, although I will admit I didn't have coffee with him this morning. There's no talk at the presidential level as to, you know, what the fallback strategy might be. It is only prudent to have discussion at lesser levels, at the staff level, as to what a fallback strategy might be, so that if and when the president ever walks into the Situation Room and says, okay, give me a report, the report is that this is not working, and he says, okay, what are my options? They need to have options for him.
Mike, but wait a minute. This is a president who hasn't shied away from autocracy, whether it's General Musharraf in Pakistan, mm-hmm. whether it's the billions of dollars we give to Mubarak in Egypt, whether it's our support for the sheikhs of Saudi Arabia or any of those United Arab Emirates who are going to give our poor reports to this is a president who, in the old Kissingerian realist strategy, and one that his father very much supported, believes that if we support a dictator and he supports America, that's okay. So doesn't that make his claim that he wants a democracy in Iraq a little hollow? I mean, I understand it's a great goal. As I said, dream the impossible dream. I can dream that Osama bin Laden will magically turn into a butterfly or will die of his, more realistically, die of his kidney disease tomorrow. But it's not a realistic strategy, is it?
Well, it is a lofty goal, and we don't know if it's the impossible dream. We know it is a realistic strategy for now. It may turn out that it doesn't work. But certainly the history shows that democracies are among the more peace-loving nations, and dictatorships are among the more warlike nations. When you've got to have the full support of your people as opposed to just the full support of the yes-men, you tend to be more circumspect about it.
Mike, listen, I agree with you, certainly with regard to established democracies, there's no question about it. But with unestablished democracies, I mean, let's not forget, Adolf Hitler was elected to the post. His chancellor was, Hindenburg was elected, and then he chose Hitler. Hezbollah has a lot of support in Lebanon. The Hamas was voted into office by the Palestinians. I mean, we have a lot of support in the Arab world, unfortunately, for some of these radical leaders. Sometimes I'm not sure democracy, at least in some areas of the region, is the right strategy.
Well, there's no doubt that democracy in the case of Hamas is democracy gone awry. I can't explain why those people would have been so misguided and misdirected as to elect a terrorist government. But they did, and so we'll work within that, and we'll try and change it and bring back another government that's a little more respectful of international law. But that's the only example of where it's really gone awry in a real election. Most of the other democracies, as you point out, established ones, albeit, they are more peace-loving. You have to have an incubative democracy before you can have an established one. You can't give them 200 years of experience. You have to give them 200
years. That's fine, but let me see if I can make my point here. My point is that there are ways, establishing democracy, anyone will admit, is a difficult, difficult task. But let me suggest to you that the worst way to establish democracy is at the point of a sword. That Vietnam, if it ever becomes a democratic nation, and I actually think in 20 years that's not an unreasonable possibility, it was never going to do it while under United States occupation, because the nationalists in Vietnam were more concerned about getting us out than they were about helping their fellow Vietnamese. And I'm afraid it's the same for Iraq. I say Kurdistan's relatively peaceful. It's a democracy. Let it go. One of the most interesting ideas I've heard recently, and I disagree with him on a number of things, but Senator Joe Biden talked about really allowing Iraq, if that's what the people want, to separate into, you can call it, three countries with a, you know, three provinces or three areas that have basically autonomy. But it just seems to me that if we are standing there in the middle trying to hold this thing together, and that's not what the Iraqi people want, eventually we're just going to have to leave and we won't have achieved anything.
Well, exactly right, Mark, if that's what the Iraqi people want. But remember, the idea of one country was what came as a result of the Constitutional Convention attended by delegates who were freely elected by the Iraqi people in that first election. So far, at least in their weakened condition, they have spoken for a democratic nation and one nation. Now, it may be that for some reason that doesn't turn out, perhaps because the Iraqi people don't want it enough, but the initial reaction or the initial indications are that is what they want, and far be it from us to tell them that we're going to carve them into three states and install three dictators. That's not what
they want. Why do we have to do anything? Why can't we leave well enough alone, let them do what they're going to do, and in essence, if they're not harming us, if they're not attacking us, leave them alone. Maybe there'll be three, maybe there'll be one. I guess, in a sense, it's not really our business as long as they're not attacking us, and then focus on the people who are attacking us, whether it's Al-Qaeda or Iran or the like.
Well, we have an obligation to assist them to achieve their goals. We were the ones who went in there, removed Saddam Hussein,
and then gave them a chance to establish their own government. We have an obligation, a moral obligation, even in my mind, Mark, stick with them as long as it's practical and it has not yet turned the corner into being impractical for us to do that. Time is running shorter, but it hasn't run out.
You know, this reminds me, it's one of those comedies, and it may be, Back to the Old Lucy Show, where she comes in and someone asks her in, and she's trying to help, and she makes a complete mess of everything. And suddenly, you know, there's goo pouring out everywhere. There's a mess on the floor, and she says, "No, wait! I made the mess. I'll clean it up." And the person just says, "Get out! Just get out! You've done enough damage. Don't make it worse." In my view, that's kind of what the Iraqis are saying to the Americans right now. Hey, Mike, I enjoyed this debate. I'm sorry we didn't get to go into George Makaka Allen. I wanted to get there, but I know you'll come back on the Inside Scoop. We can discuss it at a later time.
As you know, Mark, George Allen will be reelected, notwithstanding the Washington Post playing the race card.
Not if I can help it, but thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow is the Week in Review. And, there'll be a lot of topics to talk about, anything, really, you want to. But for now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. From a slightly damp but unbattered Southwest Florida. Glad to be along with you this afternoon. We had our doubts yesterday, but the weather has cooperated. Very, very nicely, I must say. What was his name? Ernesto. Ernesto was practically nothing. In fact, by the time it got to us, let's shut off the music there. By the time it got to us, it was nothing more than a tropical wave. So tropical wave is not much. A little breezy outside, a little rainy outside. We may get an inch and a half of rain, but that's about all.
And that makes us happy. We didn't have to board up our windows and all that. I did go out yesterday afternoon after the program and get a little gas for the generator and all that, just in case. Notorious for power lines going down around here. Not so much that trees blow over, it's that the branches blow off of them onto the spindly little Florida Department of Light or whatever they call it, Mickey Mouse Electric Company around here. And it is. It really is. You would think in an area where there's a lots of high winds with hurricanes and all that, that they'd have a well-built electrical grid with, you know, real sturdy power lines and keep the trees trimmed away from the lines and all that. But they don't. And at the slightest little breeze, the electric goes off just about every afternoon. And, well, that's how it is. But anyway, we're ever so grateful not to have faced a storm. Naturally, the grocery stores were packed yesterday. It's an interesting sight when people think bad weather's coming. You know, we are, like I said yesterday, like a flock of chickens, and just one little thing, and it's quack, 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 and everybody goes running wild like something's going to happen. I did that, and Poochie was looking at me here. Brought Kukla, the famous Yorkie, into the studio today. And she's sitting out there looking at me when I make strange noises. She doesn't like to stay at home. She likes to keep me company. So as long as she's nice and quiet, she sits in the studio out there in the outer office and fairly quiet most of the time. Anyway, glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Kind of like an open mic day here on a lazy, hazy Wednesday. We didn't plan a whole lot because we weren't sure we were going to be on today. I do want to remind you that we are going to have an interesting guest coming up at 3:30. Dr. Claudia Fagan, she's out of Chicago, and she has collaborated on a book about health care, and especially comparing health care in America here to what it is in Canada. And I hope she can enlighten us a little bit, and I know she will enlighten us a little bit on why in the world can't we have a system here like